if you could stop, so then so it could be that here, since you could lift up the yayin, but you could stop, you don't have to pour it. So that's why perhaps Rav and Rav Yirmiyah say that you're high, that there's no kamed Rav Yudei, and Shmuel holds like the lishna kam. In fact, you could say that Rav and Shmuel, Rav Rav Yirmiyah versus Shmuel, is the machlokas of the two lishanos. Or you could say that Shmuel holds like Rabbi Abin, and Rav and Rav Yirmiyah reject Rabbi Abin. That was what our Tosus in Ksubas wanted to say. But all of this discussion is predicated upon the assumption, and as is our Tosus in Ksubas, that E'ef shel nisach below hagba, that in order to do, for whatever the reason is, which we don't fully understand, in order to do nisach of yayin l'avodah zarah, you have to do hagba on the yayin. And the question is, since you're doing hagbah on the yayin first, and you're making a kinyan at the time, does that sort of remove the din of kamalid rabine? Do you say first you're chayiv on the mamon, and then later you're chayiv visa, or does somehow do we join them together? The last teretz of Tosas, however, is the following: Vi'od yeshlomar, the time of the Shmuel, afal gav the hagbah loved. Can you see the pointer? Okay, I'm doing my. So afal gav the hagbah loved tzorach the nisachu. So even though Hagba'ah is not Tzorech Nisach, now what does it mean when we say Hagba'ah lav Tzorech Nisach? What's that?
It's not an inherent part of the Nisach
Yayin. So you don't have to actually say that. You could read this as saying that you don't need to do Hagba'ah for Nisach purposes. It's a really totally separate action. Now, there is an alternative way of reading the Hagba'ah lav Tzorech Nisach, which is that, it might be E'ef shel nisach below Hagba'ah, but we still might not apply the principle of Hagba'ah Tzorech Nisach. Remember that it's possible that even though you cannot have an Hanacha without an Akira, by definition, for Melecha Shabbos, still it's possible, depending upon your Shita, and this will determine the circumstance, sometimes, despite the fact E'ef shel Lenisuch below lahanacha below akira. Nonetheless, we don't say akira tzarach hanachah. It means it's not that you don't need to do akira in order to violate melacha Shabbos. It's just we don't care. It's still considered a separate action because in certain cases the chiyuv is not simultaneous. So it could be that when it doesn't, I don't know if it matters. It could be when Tosa says that even Shmuel holds hagba lav tzarach nisachu. That doesn't really tell you whether or not it's possible to violate nisach hagba. It just tells you it doesn't really matter. Even if you can't, nonetheless, in principle, you would not say kol min rabim neiv. You would say first there is hagba, then you're chayiv for that, and in principle, and then there's nisach. So now, of course, whichever way you interpret, who's the problematic opinion right now? Whose opinion is going to be hard to explain? If you say Hagba'ah lav tzorech nisach, Shmuel's opinion. Rav says you chayiv because first you chayiv in Hagba'ah, then you chayiv misa for the nisach. But Shmuel, who says kol mei b'derab b'minei, you're not chayiv to pay anything, which is why he didn't want to list menasech in the Mishnah, or it's why he didn't read menasech in the Mishnah as menasech mamish, but rather he read it as ma'arev im yayin nesach. So why does Shmuel believe that if you were to take someone's yayin, pick it up and pour it, you would be potter because of kamalei b'derabbaminei? If hagba lav tzorech nisuch, first you steal it when you pick it up, and then you violate avodah zarah when you pour it, why would Shmuel disagree with Rav? Benny.
What chiyuv are you generating when you do hagba if you're not stealing? Like, what hezek are you causing?
Yeah, you're stealing it.
Oh, your intent is
that's a kinyan. No, that's when you pour it. Imagine the case that I steal your object and then I smash your object. I discussed this, I think, once in Shir. I know I had a discussion with a few of you in Seder. What happens if I steal a barrel of your wine and the barrel is worth $1? And now the barrel appreciates a value, it's worth $4, and I smash it. So the Gemara Bava Kama said that if I smash it, I'm chayiv to pay $4. If it breaks on its own, I'm chayiv to pay $1. So in effect, there are two mechayivim. There's the chiyuv of the geneva, there's the chiyuv of the nesach. You don't pay double. You don't say that if I smash your barrel, I have to pay $5. One for the geneva, $4 for the value. In other words, the one is going to be subsumed within the $4, even if you have to pay the $4. So the question for Shmuel is, why, if hagbal lav tzorach nisach, why don't you say you chayiv for the geneva, you have to pay for that? Okay, so you're potter on the nisach because of kam lebi the rabba minei. Satosa says as follows: Odi Shlomer the time in the Shmuel Afal Gavda Laud Sav Tzarach the Nisachu Afilu Hachi Patur Kevan the Ashas Nisach Lo Machayev. The Kim Labed the Rabbamina. Since you're not Chayev when you libate the wine for the damage you do then, even though, and let's assume for the moment, what's the problem in the first place about Mimanase Chayin? Why should you not be Chayev to pay? Remind me. No, that's forget the Avodah Zarah part. Because it's Hezek Sheinu Nikar. So for whatever reason, the Mishnah says when you do it b'mezid as a matter of principle, you have to pay by Hezek Sheinu Nikar. Because let's say when you do it b'mezid, you're chayev. Whatever the reason is. Let's say it's sometime it didn't the Rabbanan. So Tosa says, but that didn't the Rabbanan, is, as Tosa said at the beginning, I mentioned this last week, it's not going to override Kamei b'derab aminei. In other words, in the standard case, if I'm mitame your truma, if you're a kohen, or a kohen's truma, I am midamea. I mix your hulin into a kohen's truma, or your truma, and I render it. I lessen its value that way. So you don't nachai misa for doing that. So obviously, if we the Mishnah says that when you do a pemesid, you have to pay because of hezek shein anikar. So Tosa says like this again. That kevon the ashas nisuch lo machayev the kim lebe the rabamine. So fine, I understand why you're not chayev for libating the guy's wine. But what should you be chayev for? The geneva. So Tosa says a geneva. Ashas hagba, which is when you steal it, nami miftar. You're also pater. Why? To amar lo har reishol chalafanecha. Why? What's that? Because I can't. You can always give it back. Assume you do give it back. And you can say, HaReisho Chalafanecha. Now, what you're going to tell me, one second. Doesn't the whole idea of Hezek Shein Anikar mean you can't say HaReisho Chalafanecha? Agree. So, again, I understand that. But if you can say HaReisho Chalafanecha, so you can say Midrabban and they made a Gzeira on it. Correct, but they made Gzera and Hezek Shein Anikar. So the question is, why doesn't Gzera the Rabbanon apply here? Right? I took your Yayin, I was Menasech it. So I'm not Chayev on the Shas Nisuch for whatever that Nezek is, even if it were Nezek Daraisa, which it's not, because Kamed Ramine. But what about the Geneva? So Tosa says, well, you can say Aresha Cholafanecha, but didn't the Rabbanon suspend your right to say that? So Tosa says, no. Kimo Truma Venes, the Chemo. It's no different than truma v'nitnes. The chemo de im nischo acher omer lo areisho chalafanecha hachinami ki nisach le'ihu. Now, before I read on, let me explain. There is a din. I don't know what the makor for this din is. I mean, maybe it's kind of obvious. We can figure it out from the Mishnah. What happens if I steal your wine and someone else is menaseich the wine lavo desar? So now, can I return that wine to you? What, Daniel? The answer is yes. If I'm an asech the ayin, putting aside the kama of the Rabbani piece, I would be chayiv because the Rabbanu will mechayiv me on hezek shein anikar. But if I didn't do the hezek shein anikar, then I can, without my doing a masa b'yadayim, I can take that and I can return that to you and say, HaReisho Chalafanecha, if I steal your chametz before Pesach, and Pesach comes, and I don't do anything, I don't damage the chametz, I don't make it into chametz, I just steal your chametz, after Pesach, what can I do? How much is the chametz worth before Pesach? Make up something. How much is it worth after Pesach? Zero. Yet, I can return it, Mishnah says, in Bava Kama, and say, I think it's a Mishnah, HaReisho Chalafanecha. HaGozo Chametz V'Avar La Pesach. Omer La HaReisho Chalafanecha. Now, why? Well, how does that fit with this Mishnah here? The answer is there, you didn't do anything b'yadayim to damaging. When I'm mitame your truma, when I'm mitamea your chulin, when I'm an asech your yayin, putting aside the question of kamed rabaminei, biyadayim, I damage your property, but it has ekshen and nikar. The rabbanim will gozer on it. They weren't gozer on it when it's passive, when it's shogeg. So if I steal yayin and somebody else is menasech that yayin, I cannot take that yayin and return to the original owner and say reisho chalafanecha. Now, that's not what happened in this case. What happened in this case? I did it myself. But Tosfos says, that nonetheless, he says, d'chemo de'im nischo acher omer lo harei shelcho lefanecha, hachinami kinisech le'ihu, af agav de'menas echle bi'yodayim, even though you should be chayev mitzad hezek shenunikar, kevan du'kim le, but the rabbamine, you are pater. So, but why am I allowed to say, so how can I give it back to you? I thought we said you can't give it back. So the answer is no. There are two separate chiyuvim. When I steal something from yours and I damage it, one is the geneva, and one is the nezek that I do. So the way it works is that when I steal something from you, there's a value to what I stole, and there's an obligation to return it. When I damage your property, I now, if I do it biyadayim, I'm obligated to pay for the damage. If I don't do it, this is true about not only in this case. I steal your barrel of wine, Benny. It's worth $1. It appreciates in value. It's now worth $4. If that barrel breaks by accident, even though as a ganav, I am normally chayv on all onsen that happens. Right? Let's say the barrel didn't appreciate in value. Steal a barrel of yours, okay, and lightning strikes it. Right? I steal your car, which was parked on the street in front of your house. I drive it around the block, and then I park it in the exact same spot, and you're away in Florida on vacation. And the next day, while you're still in Florida, lightning strikes the car. So am I chayv to pay? The answer is yes. Why? Because of a ganav, and I haven't returned the car yet to the Rishus Bailam. The street is not Rishus Bailam. Okay? So when you... How would you return the car? You'd have to put it in his garage. What's that? You'd have to tell him, and he'd have to accept it back from you. You don't have to go into the details. Learn the last sugya. I think it's the last sugya of Bava Kamma. Bottom line is, if you steal something, until you do a chazara lo shus bailim, there's nothing to talk about being pater on onsen. Nothing to talk about because it's not called a chazara. Doesn't matter. And I picked that case because you know it would have happened anyway. Right? In other words, he's away in Florida. If I hadn't stolen his car, driven around the block once, you know, unless you realign the atoms in the universe that caused the lightning to strike in this place, which is highly unlikely, the bottom line is it would happen anyway. But it doesn't matter. Why am I chayef to pay? Because when I am a ganav, I steal something, I am mischayef ba'onsen. Period. So why, when the barrel breaks on its own, why am I chayef to pay only one zuz, not four zuzim, which is his value now? The answer is, when I don't actually damage the object that I stole biyadayim, my obligation to pay stems from the original theft, not from the current loss. And therefore, I don't pay four zuz for the value of the barrel now, I pay one zuz for the value of the barrel earlier. But if I take a crowbar and I smash your barrel, then the din is that I pay the value of the barrel now, because that's when I'm mischayef for this nesek. So I'm chayef for two different things. So Tosas says for Shmuel, one second, Daniel, I'll take your question in a second. Tosas says for Shmuel that you're patur on the nezek of being menasech liyayim because of kam lebe the rabbinine. You're patur on the original geneva. Why? Because I can say harei shel chalafanecha. The din of Hezek Shenonikar being treated as a Nezek, even though it looks the same, and I should be able to say, I didn't do anything to your object. That's only when it comes to Nezek Biyadayim. So for the Nezek that I did later, even though I can't say, I'm pater anyway. Why? Because I was already Avodah Zarah in that act. For the Geneva that I did originally, Shmuel says you're pater. Why? Because I can say harei shelcha lefanecha. Right? It's not crazy what Tosa says for Shmuel. Of course, what's the problem then? What is Rav going to say? According to Rav, why are you chayev to pay in this case? Why can't you, in a situation where I stole your wine, then I was menasech it, why can't you take that wine, gather it back up, if I poured it into a bowl, pour it right back into the bottle, and say, here's your wine. You're going to say, but you did a hezek shenonikar. When I did a hezek shenonikar, I was pater because of kalmei d'rabbimei. Because when I did a hezek shenonikar, I was worshipping Avodah Zarah exactly simultaneously. Mitzad, I stole it from you, and now I did a hezek shenonikar. That doesn't matter. Because on the geneva, at the time of the geneva, I could simply have returned, I can return it as is. If I steal your chametz, and it's Avar Lava Pesach, and now Hezek Shenonikar has happened to it. Not I did it, but it has happened to it. I can return it to you and say, Reshach HaLafanecha. So the fact that I was the one who was Mazik, your Yayin Biyadayim, and a Hezek Shenonikar, that's irrelevant because I'm Pater on the Hezek Biyadayim. I'm Pater on stage 2 because of Kamei Rabbinei. What am I Chayef for? Stage 1. But on stage one, I didn't do anything. I just stole it. If I stole it, I can return it and say, I reish l'cha lefanecha. So the question is, why is Rav l'chaiv you ashas hagma? Again, if you couldn't return the wine, if you couldn't return the actual wine, you put it on the ground. Everybody agrees, of course you're chayiv to pay. It has nothing to do with hezek shen ikar. I poured your wine on the ground. It got absorbed in the mud and it's gone. I need to pay you back the yayin. When Shmuel says that when I'm menasech your yayin, that I would be, putting aside the Mishnah, when Shmuel says that I would be potter if I'm menasech your yayin, it means if I take the yayin and give it back to you. If I don't give it back to you, and if I pour it on the ground where it's not returnable, of course I'm chayiv to pay. Nothing to do with hezek, it's a hezek anikar. Everybody understands the damage. But if I return the wine to you, I should be potter. So why does Rav say, no kamei b'de Rav? No, why does Rav say you chayiv to pay for the original geneva? Again, it's not Shmuel is not pottering you on the original geneva mitzad kamei b'de Rav. It's a crucial point. He's pottering you mitzad that you can return it. Daniel.
So I have a few questions and maybe a possible answer.
Okay. He wants my job, apparently. Okay. So, by the way, so Rav Chanan Wasserman just basically says, nobody... Oh, I'm sorry. Can I read Rav? Let's read Rav for a second. And then he basically says, nobody understands what Tosus means. V'Rav, the last five lines of Tosus. Rav Savar, Kevan de Bishas Hagboha, Lo Shayach Lememar Dekom Lebe de Rav Aminei. Can we understand that the Chiyuv that was a product of just the stealing... You can't say kamei b'de Rav Aminei because when he stole it, it's a totally separate action. He's not violating Avodah Zarah at the time, so of course he should be chayiv to return the geneva. So therefore, yesh l'chayiv mechamas hagboha ako ma sheyase b'yadayim achrechein afal gav deishayta kamei b'de Rav Aminei. Since you can't say kamei b'de Rav Aminei the moment that you stole it, you should be chayiv then on the geneva for any damage that you did biyadayim later. For the damage you did biyadayim later. Why? The chayiv you do for the damage later is dafka a chayiv later, not now. Meaning that's why when I break your barrel, I don't say, sorry, I smashed it, but here's one zuz what it was worth when I stole it. I have to pay four zuz because... That's what I'm chayiv for. I'm chayiv for the nezek at that time. If I hadn't smashed the barrel, I could just return it. So why? I understand that you're not potter because of kam lebe the rabba mine when you steal the thing. Shmuel agrees to that. That wasn't the way Tosus didn't say that Shmuel held. You're potter because of kam lebe the rabba mine. You're potter because you can return it. Because you say, reish l'chal fanecha. So why? I understand that you don't say kam lebe the rabba mine when you steal it. But why should I be chayiv then on any nezek that I do later? The nezek that I do later is mechayiv me later, and I'm potter for the technical reasons of kam lebe rabba mine. But that shouldn't not enable me to return it now. Okay. Daniel?
When you're returning the... Well, two questions. Number one, just a basic question. Isn't kam lebe rabba mine for like two totally separate acts? And like it seems as if the damaging of the wine via the avodah zarah is like dependent on the very fact that you stole it. I mean, you wouldn't have been able to damage it unless you stole it. So it's kind of like they're interrelated and they're... Do you understand?
No, but I couldn't eat the chaylev unless I stole it. Go back to the original case. The fact that the two are connected doesn't... Kam lebe rabba mine is...
But eating the chaylev is, let's say, the second part in our case now with the wine. Because eating the chaylev and damaging the wine, let's say you stole it on day one and then you damage it on day seven while you're doing the avodah zarah. So it's like...
No, the difference is the damage is the avodah zarah. That's the damage that you're doing to you.
Yeah, no, that occurs at a later time than when you stole it.
Agreed. And the same thing by chaylev. So that's a reason why, in principle, you should have been chayev, right? Because that's...
Yeah.
Okay, but... Right, but you can always return it. By chaylev, you can't return it. Okay, you ate it. It's gone.
So
you can return the wine.
But my question now is, you're not actually returning it in its original form, if I'm not mistaken. Isn't now the wine not kosher?
Yeah, well, that's the point, but it's not physically distinguishable. You know, this is not the only way of doing it, but ask if you want to know whether something is called nezek, ask a guy. It's the way to do it. Meaning, the guy looks at it and says, what's wrong with it? That's hezek shenu nikar. Right, tastes the same, looks the same.
But
does
it,
what's that? But that's called hezek sheino nikar. That's what it means. It means that it's not a value that's inherent in the object itself. It's because some external, in this case, typically it's a religious obligation. Right, so you can, the whole point of saying Arei Shechal Afanecha is that this is physically the same object that I stole, unchanged, undamaged in the classic sense. That's called Hezek Shein Nikar. So the Machlokes HaMorayim, whether Me'ikar Adin, Hezek Shein Nikar is Hezek, and the Rabbanon canceled the Chi of Beshogeg, or whether it is not Hezek, but the Rabbanon created a Chi of Amazin. So that's a Machlokes over whether metaphysical damage is damage. But we're assuming for the moment that it's not. We're assuming that Al Pi Din Torah, I stole your chametz. And there's not only the Torah, then the Rabbanon. I steal your chametz. Right now it's worth $100. The devil dogs are very valuable devil dogs. Okay, and now Yom Tov is over. Pesach comes. Yom Tov now passes. The devil dogs are worth zero to you as a firm Jew. Doesn't matter because nothing has changed in the devil dogs themselves. However, you can say, Arei Shechal Lefanecha. You could show it to a guy and he would say, it's the same devil dogs. What's the big difference? Just to return the devil dogs. So we're going to assume for the moment that Me'ikar Adin, except for Adin the Rabbanon, Hezek Shenikar is not considered damage, but the Rabbanon made, when you do it on purpose and you do it B'yadayim, the Rabbanon make you chayef to pay.
So Nezikah, you're saying, generally speaking, without the rabbinic prohibition at the end that you just mentioned, only has to do with the physicality of...
Correct.
Are there any other types of payment that don't have to do with the physicality, the physical worth of the... Meaning, it's no longer used to the subject from whom you stole it from.
But it doesn't matter. If it's a market value in a neutral market would be X, which it would be if you go to the Goyim, you go sell the devil dogs in the bodega in Washington Heights, so it's going to sell for the same price of any other devil dogs that weren't over Lava Pesach.
But if you steal milk and then that milk now becomes spoiled.
And you answer the question for me.
The market value. Okay, so if you ask a Goy, the guy will tell you that it's now spoiled.
Well, it's not just that. It physically has changed. It's not the same milk anymore. It's physically different. It was milk. It's now chemically different. It's got bacteria growing by the boatloads. It tastes different. It smells different.
So it needs to be an objectified valuation, so to speak.
Well, any physical change, by definition, if it's enough of a change, it's a shinoi, and it's no longer the same object. Harei Shilcha Lefanecha is predicated upon an assumption that when I steal Daniel's notebook, I am a chuyev, as long as it's extant, I must return that notebook. If I put the notebook through the shredder, I can't then turn around and say, Harei Shilcha Lefanecha, even I give every piece, because that's a shinoi she'ena chozer lebriyaso. It's a new, so we say, panim chadashos ba'olokan, it's a new object. But as long as the object is extant, it looks exactly the way it does before, it smells the way it did before, it tastes the way it did before, it's exactly the same physical object. What has changed is something that's metaphysical. It's now chametz she'avel arba pesach, it's now tamei, it's now meduman.
So, can't you also say now, but if you're only going to look at it from a goy's perspective, from a non-Jew's mm-hmm. market value perspective, then can't you say the same thing about wine? If I let's say, have a glass of wine that's non-Mevushal, and then a goy comes and touches it,
right.
So then that value...
That's Hezek Shein Nikar. Exactly. It's exactly... To me, it's worth nothing because I'm from it. I won't be netted from it. But it's not that the physical object has changed. That's what a hezek shein nikar is. So it seems, this machlokas amar, and we assume usually, I think, and Tosis is assuming that hezek shein nikar midina daraisa is not called a hezek. Midrabanan, they will machayiv you when you're mazik biyadayim so that people shouldn't go ahead. And, this is a great way to really mess somebody over, right? Until now, I've told you about, burning down your house on Shabbos, so I won't have to pay him only chayiv misa. But I even got better ideas. I'll take all your kosher food and I'll mix it in with trey food.
It loses its value as it being kosher. And kosher is still something that you can classify as a market value.
So again, I would just say. That change, I don't think it's not primarily a market value. It's a question of whether or not, the issue is the following. If I steal something from you and I can return it to you in extant form, then it's not called Hezek HaNikar. I can say to you, Harei Shechal Lefanecha, and I have fulfilled my obligation of Heishivis HaGzeila Asher Gazal, which I'm obligated to do if I can. So if I take your truma, and I'm a tamid, I touch a sheretz to it, it's the exact same physical object, and say, here's your truma. And so on and so forth. Okay, so, Yaakov, if you haven't lost, do you want to go further with the question?
It's not that it's morally about, it's a halachic...
It's not that
they don't take into account the subject, the subject's personal... Like if you see
I think it's a natural outgrowth of the fact that the flip side to that would be that if you don't establish that principle of Rishal Chanfanecha, it is possible that I could steal your object and say, look, fine, I'll pay you for it. If it's what we call probably chamas, well, after you got away with it. It's an ultimate violation of Lo Sachmon. I like Hillel's computer, so I'm going to steal it and say, okay, listen, Hillel, here's a $700, whatever the cost of your computer is, because I like your computer, right? And I'm keeping it. The fact that the Torah, it's the flip side of the coin of if the object is extant, you must return it. You cannot keep it for yourself. By the same token, if I'm allowed to return it, I'm returning it, and because it is the object, right? And you could imagine, again, if I make a physical change in it, so you say it's not the same object anymore, right? But
it essentially isn't, because now not only are you prohibiting the subject from drinking that wine, now all observant Jews cannot drink from that wine, meaning it has no value towards an entire category of people.
It's true, but it still is the same. Again, it stems not... Again, take the Chametz of our Lava Pesach as a good example. I understand. In other words, all that's changed is the Talachic... Correct.
It's not enjoying the idea of the Hasid Shem HaMikr.
Now, the whole point is that Nezek is classified as, generally speaking, Nezek requires active behavior, and it has to be something that is a physical change. Right? You're correct. It's the same thing with the Chametz Lava Pesach. It doesn't matter that its value, its market value may be zero in this particular place, but the bottom line is the exact same Chametz. So when I return it to you, it's Veshiva Sagzeh Kasher Gazal. In the same sense, let me give you the following example, which again, you'll say there is a degree of injustice, and I understand, but there's a flip side. Let's say I steal your... I don't know, your computer, and your computer is no longer being made, and it becomes, an antique, and instead of being worth, your tablet being worth $500, it's now worth $5,000. Can I say to you, look, here's $500, what I stole it from you, am I allowed to do that? The answer is no. Why not? Because you still have title to the computer. Now, if I damage the computer, so I have to pay you the value that, assuming if I damage it initially, I pay you the $500, that's the way it is. Now, the alternative would be, and again, when that computer has appreciated value, is that a physical change? No. So let's say I steal your computer from you when it's worth $500, and tomorrow, is that an iPad or something? No, what is it? It's an iPad? Okay, and tomorrow, the new iPad model comes out. Okay? And that, the iPad, plummets in value. It was worth $500 today, tomorrow it's worth $200. Now, you might say to me, when I give it back to you, it's not fair. Because I stole something worth $500, and now I'm returning something worth $200. But the point is, why am I allowed to do that? The answer is because I am fulfilling the obligation of returning what I stole. Once the object has changed in a way that it is not what I stole anymore, then I can't get away with that. But that requires a physical shinui.
Society's perception of that object has changed.
I agree.
Okay.
But the bottom line is it's not. That's why I shouldn't use the goy necessarily as an example. As long as I am returning physically exactly what I stole, I haven't made a shinui, or no shinui has taken place. That's face shivas hagzela asher gazal, as Chazal say ke'ein shegazal. If I'm returning the exact same physical object, then that's hashavas hagzela. It doesn't mean it's right. It doesn't mean it's a good thing. It doesn't make me a tzaddik. I may be a Rasha. You might, sometimes it's conceivable, you might even say that the person to be Yotzei Yedei Shamayim has to pay the loss in value. But there are a lot of things like that in Nezek, where to be Yotzei Yedei Shamayim, you have to pay for something that technically based in cannot obligate you to pay. But here it's a natural outgrowth of there being two tracks within paying back something that you stole. Track number one is Kasher Gazal, Ke'en She'Gazal. And track number two is when you can't do Ke'en She'Gazal, then you pay Tashlumen, you pay loss. So that's why, in other words, if I steal your barrel of wine and it's worth $500 and now it declines to $100 and now an accident happens and the barrel breaks, how much do I have to pay you? $500, because I stole something worth $500 from you. Unless I can return that barrel of wine, not another barrel of wine, the equivalent, that barrel of wine.
So could I potentially steal your barrel of wine now? It was originally worth $500, now it's worth $5,000. I sell it for $5,000, I keep $4,500 and give you $500.
So I'm not allowed to do that.
But technically speaking, you...
If I did, probably it's not... No, I don't know, because when you steal it, that might be considered nezek b'adayim, so I might be chayav to pay the $5,000 anyway. I'm not 100% sure, but that's what it really boils down to. So certainly you're not allowed to do that. We could question whether or not that's called nezek b'adayim.
Okay.
Yaakov, go ahead. You wanted to...
just to clarify what you're saying, then maybe I'll ask a question. You're saying that we should be Tosafot as saying that you're chayav for the stealing that you do now, and then the question is, that makes no sense because... Sorry, Tulsa was saying you're kind for whatever damage you do when you do the Niso. But that makes no sense because you could return it as is, or as was, and not be high of any.
For the Geneva.
For the Geneva.
That's Shmuel's position. Shmuel's position is that, again, Shmuel, Tosfos doesn't say this spells out, but according to Tosfos, in order for Shmuel to say your potter here, and I think that's given, I think that's pasha for the Gemara, you have to return the wine.
But Tosfos doesn't necessarily say that Rav is talking about the Geneva, it's just everything that comes after that, because you do the Hagbah.
But again, Yesh Lechayev Mechamas Hagbah, you're Chayev for the Geneva.
Just because of the Hagbah, because you did the Hagbah, you're Chayev for everything that happens.
After, you're Chayev for everything that you do later, not what happens later. The problem is Masha Yaseh B'Yadayim Achreichein is a Mechayev on the Nezek, not on the Geneva.
So what?
And therefore...
I just don't know if you're reading... My problem is I don't know if they're saying that because of the... that you should be Chayev on what you did during the Geneva, they might be saying that you should be Chayev for what you did then, when you did the Nisuch Hayayin, even though there's commonly been a Ravine.
I know, but my question for you is, once you're not Chayev on the Shas Nisuch Hayayin, what you do be a dying because of commonly been the Ravine, so why are you Chayev? So basically, that is the equivalent of if the wine was spilled out by someone else, where I'm not Chayev. Meaning, I didn't do the Nesek. I didn't do the Nesek Biyadayim, or I'm not Chayev on the Nesek Biyadayim. So how can I now be chayev earlier, in effect, for some? And if you said that I was chayev no matter how the wine became nisnaseich, that the way I would say it is like this: the chakira that Rav Akiva Eiger, he doesn't say it this way, but almost wants to make is the following: the machlokas Rav and Shmuel, it wouldn't be the following. Shmuel says that hezek she'enu nikar, you're chayev for your maisa. It's not that Hezek Shena Nikar is considered Hezek. It's not that we look at it as if it's Nikar, but rather we just Bechayev you for your Maisa. And Rav says no. Rav says that we look at the Zerim of the Rabbanan as that Hezek Shena Nikar is as if it's Nikar. Right? So if you say that, I understand why Rav is Mechayev you on the Geneva now. Because since you can't return the object because the Hezek HaNikar was done to it, because we treat it as nikar, so now you can't return your chayiv on the Geneva, and there's no kamei ramne on the Geneva. The problem is that if Rav were correct, then what difference does it make whether if hezek shein or nikar is the gzera darbanan is to treat it as nikar, then why should it matter whether someone else did it or I did it? The bottom line is now it looks different. This is now not just yayin anymore. This is yayin nesach, and everybody can see the difference. So then it shouldn't matter. You should always be chayiv whether you were menasech b'yadayim or if someone else was menasech. And you shouldn't be able to say, Harei Shelcha Lefanecha. But you can. That was the point that Tosfos made earlier, and he doesn't contest that. I think everybody agrees that if someone else is Menasech, or if it's an Esnasech B'Shogeg, where the Gzera of the Mishnah against Hezek Shinonika B'Shogeg, there's no Gzera, so then you're allowed to say Harei Shelcha Lefanecha. But why? If basically the principle is to say that whenever you have a Hezek Shinonika, it's treated as if it's a Nikar, so what difference does it make whether I do be a dime or not? I mean, you have to say, it's a kanas midrabanan to look at hezek shen and nikar as if it's nikar, but only when you do it biyadayim. Someone else does it biyadayim, you don't look at it that way. Okay? And once you say you're looking at it as if it's damaged in that case, as if it's nikar, then I understand why you can't say reshal shalchavanecha, because whenever the damage is recognizable, you can't say reshal chavanecha, because it's not yours. It's something else. Shua?
For those who do our reshal chavanecha,
yes.
So in Rishul's case, he paid Keitel.
Let's assume you're Goslin.
Right?
Let's assume you're Goslin. Yeah, we're not going to... You can have fun things with the Keifa, right? And you could wind up with a situation in theory where you are... No, it's not going to help anyway, because Keifel is the amount... I think Keifel is Kishas Amad Abedin. Mishas Amad Abedin, it's worth zero. So there is no Keifel. Because two times... Well, I would say that... Right. Yes.
So he gives the wine back, and then for Rav, right? Somehow this track is created. And when you steal something, then this why now exists in a totally different realm than life.
Right, that's the problem. Yeah, it has to be shi'asa bi'adayim. So in other words, when you're osa bi'adayim, then the eino nikar aspect is nikar, and so that you can't say reisho
chalafanecha. It's like cross realms of dinei mamonos, because it goes from hezek back to gneiva. And
yeah.
I think that gneiva is somehow defined by a din that we have in hezek and zezikin.
It's difficult. It's a very, very, very difficult tussle. That's why, you know, what was his language? Lo yisbonein lenevonim or something like that. Nobody understands what tussle means. Yaakov.
Just for the record, the tussle of Rosh and Gittin says that...
I looked at tussle Rosh, he says the same thing.
He says, we shot Hagdo, not Bachma Hagdo, meaning that everything that... it might be subject to the same problem with Mashi Yadayim, but...
He used the exact same language of Mashi Yasebi Yadayim. I looked at Tosas Suresh.
Even though it's not because of your stealing, even though it's just within your own realm of...
By the Mishas Hagbah still means the same thing. As your Mishas Hagbah, you're Chayev, but it's for the Hagbah also. No, Mishas means that it's not, there's no common the Rav Minah yet. So this, that's all.
No, I understand what he's using it for. But I think the implication might be that within the period over which you own the wine, there's something special about what you specifically do. What you yourself do.
Agreed, but the question is why? Yeah. Why difference does it make? In other words, again, so you can formulate, you can be dochik, as Rav Charan says. You can dochik something, but it doesn't really doesn't resonate. Yes.
Is it possible that there's like a difference when the ganav is pouring the wine on the lodas are altar, whatever the process that they do? Is it possible that there's some difference within the action of the Avodah Zarah and the actual damage to the goods? Meaning, is there...
I'm not grasping.
When he pours the wine onto the altar of Baal,
right?
Is there a separation between when the... Is that within itself, that separate act, is that definitely a kamlei b'drabba meaning? Maybe Rav doesn't hold it, then is it a kamlei b'drabba meaning?
Now, I would say whatever moment you worship the Avodah Zarah, it also becomes Asur B'Hanah, by definition. Whenever that is. In other words, whenever the Avodah takes place, that's also when it becomes Asur B'Hanah. Your action of Avodah Zarah is what's Asur Zit B'Hanah. So they're simultaneous by definition. I don't know if that's when the wine hits the basin at the base of the Avodah Zarah or when the wine is in the air and you pour it, but it doesn't matter. It will be simultaneous. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Okay. So that was what Tosus in. Okay. Sam, can I trouble you to hit the lights? So, even though you're not thinking about it when you're in the shower because you're not clothed, so you're not thinking in the Brit Torah, but if you happen to be, if you're showering in your bathing suit and not in a bathroom area and you just happen to be thinking about it and inspiration comes to you, so there's a job waiting here. What's that?
Fast and slow.
It has to be system one. System one will have to be working. Okay. Anyway. So with that part, so now we can move on to other items in Tosfos. I know. Oh, I didn't get it? I always press the on button again. There we go. Thinking that, okay. All right, so we have a couple more tosasim I want to do. When we are finished with these tosasim, which will not be today, we're finished with them, we are going to begin chazara. And when that chazara is completed, all you need from me are the chazara questions on this amud, this blot, actually. You will go over those chazara questions, and we will come into shir, and I will go over them. That is the bechina. So, anyway. You have, I think, most of the chazara questions already. Isn't that right? You guys are looking at me like you've been hit by a Mack truck. Okay, right? Those Chazara questions I sent out before Yom Tov, I promised they would come out. What?
Yeah, it kind of sounds familiar.
I'll send them again. I'm very happy to do that. Okay. So now, Before, I want to mention one observation. A couple of you spoke to me about this maybe a week ago. I can't remember how long. How long have I been back since break?
2 weeks.
2 full weeks. This is the third week? Ready? Or this is the second week? This is the third week, right?
Third week.
Okay, whatever. I cannot keep track of time. So we pointed out that the Kasha of the Gemara on Gonei Kis B'Shabbos, Tosafot says, is only on the first Deah. It's not on the second. And almost all of the Rishonim say that. There is an exception. If you look at the long paragraph in the Ramban, and I believe Ibai Gochen Va'achel, I think is the Divar Maschel, at the way end, if you read carefully, the Ramban proposes an alternative, which does not entail limiting the Gemara's question only according to the first Lashon. It's interesting. You can go take a look at that. Anyway, but I would like to look at Tosus Dibur Maschel, the boy, Gochin, the Achil here. Very quickly, because this is not... It's important to see what's going on, and Zach, you made an observation when we first started the sugya, which I think was correct, but fundamentally speaking, there isn't what I would call a... The machlokas harishonim here is really not conceptually how to understand iboi gachin v'achel, the machlokas Rashi and Tosos, but it is a machlokas, it would seem, how to relate this sugya to the previous sugya. And as I mentioned before, I thought more than one Rishon said it, but right now I can only find the ra'ah. The Gemara says, the question is, what is the relationship between Rabbi Abin Shita and the Teirutzim and the Gemara and the previous sugya, right? In Rabbi Abin, the Gemara said, you know why you're chayiv by gonev chel bo shel chaver v'achala? Why? What was the Gemara's language? The iboi gochen v'achel, right? You can bend down and eat it. So ask yourself a question, and therefore what? What is the thrust of the Gemara by saying that? Okay, so it sounds like it's saying that conceptually, the theft and the avera are in fact separate because you can do the avera without stealing it. Let me tell you this way: you can't do it without stealing it, but you can do the avera without having stolen it before. Right? In other words, when you do the avera, when you eat the chelep, that's an act of theft. But the point is that you would have said kamei drabinan. But since doing a kinyan before is not necessary in order to violate the chelev, you can do it at one moment. Therefore, if you do a kinyan before, it's a totally separate action. You're chayiv for the kinyan, you're chayiv for the ganeva, and now you're chayiv for eating the chelev. Whereas by akira and hanacha, let's assume for the moment by Zorek Chetz, you know, Vikarashi Ryan Shel Chavero, so there, without the Akira, you cannot violate Shabbos. There is no Chilul Shabbos, period. Right? If you don't do an Akira, you might do Nezek, but you won't be Chayef for Shabbos. It is not only physically, it is halachically impossible to violate Shabbos with a Hanacha if there's no Akira that precedes it. And thus, the akira, which precedes the actual damage, is part of the act of Chilul Shabbos, and therefore it is considered simultaneous. That seems to be what the Gemara is saying. Whereas, if you could just be chayiv in the totality with the Hanacha, then it means that that even if you happen to do start the malacha before the shirayim are torn, it doesn't matter, because since you don't have to, since you could violate Shabbos only with the final act, it's irrelevant that you started doing it before. So the fact, it's a separate act, and therefore, by the same token, when you pick up the chelev to eat it, since you could have done it without picking it up, without making the kinyan prior to the Echila. Therefore, when you do pick it up, it's a totally separate action. You're chayav for the kinyan, for the hagbah, then you're chayav for the achilas chela. But by Shabbos, because at the end of the day, there is no akira, hagnacha. Without an akira, that procedure, there is no way. Therefore, as soon as you do the akira, the malacha starts, and if the nesek happens between the akira and the hanacha, including at either point, either during the akira or during the hanacha, you're going to be potter because of kamlei b'derabbanan. So the question, however, is how does that explanation relate to the previous sugya? Because after all, what do we know from the previous sugya? We know the following. Under ordinary circumstances, what does Iboy Gacham to Achel mean normally? It means I bend down, I pick up the piece of meat or the food with my mouth, I chew it and I swallow it. So what should the din have been in that case?
You
were kona in your mouth, and therefore, when you swallow it, it's a separate action. Now, the Gemara in the previous sugya was bothered by that question. So the Gemara, what did the Gemara end up coming up with? I don't care the specific example, but conceptually, what was the Gemara's teretz on Lamed Amud Beis? That I do it in such a way that the kinyan doesn't take place in my mouth, the kinyan takes place in the Beis HaBliya at the same time as I'm swallowing. It is actually simultaneous, meaning it is genuinely possible to have the kinyan simultaneous with the B'liya. Our Gemara does not seem to assume that. Our Gemara sounds like if I bend down, chop shot, the way Rashi explains. Well, how does Rashi explain the Ibai Gach and the Achel? What's the point? What's that? Under three tfachim, and therefore, you're not Kona Bahagbah. So tell me, what happens when you go under three tfachim? It's like you're really, really hungry. You have your bowl of soup, and you're spooning it into your mouth. Or if it's little pieces of food, better that way. Pick up the piece, put it in my mouth. Pick up the piece, put it in my mouth. So there's, you're not kona b'hagbah, but you should be kona when you put it in your mouth. So therefore, what Rashi sounds like he might be assuming, and other the Ra'os says it explicitly for the first lashon in the Gemara, what's going on here? We assumed until now that in order to be chayav on something, in order for the action of the to begin, of simultaneity, it has to be something that's halachically required. So the Gemara here may be stating that no, it's not that achila is necessarily, putting it in your mouth is necessarily halachically required for swallowing. You're chayav for the swallowing, not putting it in your mouth. But there's one little catch. It's kind of hard to swallow something if you don't put it in your mouth. In fact, it's not only kind of hard, it is darn impossible. And therefore, what our Gemara seems to be assuming is that even if it's not a halachic part of the Avera, putting it in your mouth because it is a sine qua non for swallowing it marks the beginning of the Avera. Picking it up in your hand, not so much. There, you don't have to pick it up. You don't have to make a kinyan outside your mouth. But you have to put it in your mouth. And therefore, the Shas Avera begins when you put it in your mouth and finishes when you swallow. Any damage that takes place, once it's in your mouth, until the time you swallow, it's considered simultaneous. Thus, if I actually do bend down and go chomp, I will be pata because of kamai b'derabbanan, because there was no way to avoid eating it. However, if I pick it up with my hands and raise it three tefachim and make a kinyan, I will not be pata on the grounds of kamai b'derabbanan, because that kinyan, the kinyan that precedes the act of the Avera, which is defined as from the time I put it in the mouth to the time I swallow, is not necessary in order to violate the Avera, because I could have bent down and picked it up with my mouth. And thus, when I pick it up with my hand, I violate Geneva first, and only later do I violate the Avera, no Kamei B'Rabbanan. Which means that if you believe Hagbah Tzorach Achila, that Akira Tzorach Hanacha, then Sima Bepeh is Tzorach B'Liya, and therefore, this sugya disagrees with the previous sugya. The previous sugya says that if I put it in my mouth without picking it up, just by grabbing it with my mouth, I will not be part on the grounds of kalamei b'derabbanan, because I violate the geneva first with my mouth, my kinyan chatzar of my mouth, and then I violate the avera when I swallow. But this sugya assumes no, since it's impossible to do blia without putting it in your mouth from the time it enters your mouth is already considered the shas avera, and you say kalamei b'derabbanan. There were a bunch of questions. Daniel.
Remember we were talking about the hygienic differences? Could it be what exactly are they speaking about on Lamed Aleph?
On Lamed Aleph.
On Lamed Aleph.
You mean Laman Ahmed Beis, because there's nothing on Laman Ahmed.
What are they speaking about there?
No, so there they're just talking about a question of why, in other words, who is really responsible? Could you actually have expelled it from your mouth and returned its original state? But let's just accept the Gemara's teretz. The last teretz of the Gemara was that once it is in... let's take the teretz of Rapapa, just to keep it simple. That your friend puts it in your mouth. Well, I would say that the following: what the Gemara does assume. Forget what the Gemara is trying to find the odd case where they're simultaneous. What the Gemara takes as a given is that if someone puts the piece of mouth whole, the piece of food in your mouth whole, where it is not damaged at all, but it's inside your mouth, the Gemara seems to assume, and you could just expel it and it would be perfectly fine. The Gemara assumes that it's two separate acts. Our Gemara seems to assume that it's not, in the first lashon at least.
So my question is maybe the nature of the object itself, like if you put water in somebody's mouth or wine in somebody's mouth, opposed to, let's say,
That's what Rapapa said. Rapapa said that Rapapa's solution to the problem, how to get a komei b'derabba minei, by ochal truma, was to have someone put something that, as soon as it goes in your mouth, by definition, it's inedible. That's a liquid.
So then my question is on the second sugya that seems to disagree with the first sugya, maybe just the nature of the object is different. Meaning, maybe in the second sugya it's speaking about liquid, and in the first sugya it's speaking about an object. Or is maybe just there's a tanaitic disagreement.
Except for the problem is that it's chaylev.
Yeah, what...
Chaylev is a solid.
It's a solid.
It's fat. Not the kind of thing most of us like to eat. I don't mean from a health perspective or a taste perspective, but it was once considered choice. It was firstly the highest in caloric content, which in a world in which calories were in short supply, every opportunity to ingest chaylev was a golden opportunity for survival. Okay, today it might perhaps be, you know, not good in terms of, I don't know if it's saturated fat, but who knows? Maybe if you eat the Neanderthal diet, but we'll leave that alone for the moment. Ezra?
You don't eat chaylev plain, do you?
Me?
No, just when they say you eat chaylev, is that like just chaylev?
It certainly sounds like that from the Gemara. I know when you have negative associations with it, but I don't know that people. No, that's not true. You probably have negative associations with the shuman that's found in the meat. Right, in other words, you cut around the fat, most of us. And once you cut around it, I don't know, I never, as a kid, not because of health reasons, but I didn't find it particularly good, but it is, you know, if chaylev is what often gives the meat flavor, if you know, marbleized fat, so there may be people who like it straight up. I don't know. You have certain cultural assumptions about, like, pure fat, which may not be always have been shared. You know that it's flavorful generally because it flavors the rest of the meat. Right, so I know that that's not a riot because salt is also flavorful. Most people don't just take teaspoons of salt and swallow them, or same thing for spices. I understand, but I think that it sounds like people did kind of eat it straight up sometimes.
And people like chon.
Let's not go there. Yes, Josh.
I'm assuming that if you go passing like empty that isn't really normal, it would go into a separate category. So, for instance, you had something nice, what they did to the prisoners from like Guantanamo, where they like shoved food directly into their throats. They bypassed the mouth. That still count as a.
The first thing when they actually did it at Guantanamo. Was that for hunger fasting people?
Oh!
I thought this was a form of torture. No. I know we had a lot of different forms of torturing them, but I didn't know that. You know that
or
that's.
You have something like those cows.
You sure once a bunch of Landanim who were just trying to experiment with Tachava Beis Avliya? Because that would I wanted to see that.
Yeah, I was just wondering. Like,
I don't know how many of the.
You can either quote Tosos or you can go like Guantanamo Bay.
Or
Guantanamo Bay.
Yeah.
Or the guard beforehand.
So what's your question exactly?
Do it in such
an
odd manner.
So the Gemara said earlier, you have to look back to the Gemara, if you put it in a place where they have no choice but to swallow, then they're totally pater. Both on the chaylev and on the mamon. The guards would be chayev on the mamon. Nobody would be chayev on the chaylev. Okay. So now let's take a look at that. But Tosus doesn't say that's why he's doing what he's... Now... What about the second teretz of the Gemara? Rashi doesn't talk about it. But what's the second teretz of the Gemara? The second teretz of the Gemara is that some two actions are not considered one unless...
Unless
I matzi lo boy la dure. What does that mean? Is that once the train, if you cannot stop the train once it leaves the station, then it's considered one action, right? So if I shoot an arrow, according to Rabbi Abin, once it leaves my hands, I can't take it back. If I'm running, you know, with a spear or a knife in hand, well, I could stop.
Could be that you can't stop because your momentum is going so fast that it, you're bound to, like, physically.
So if you want to, what's that?
No, that's just not what we're talking about.
Well, but then that is throwing an arrow. Now, the Gemara assumes that when you're mafir dalad amas b'shus harabim and you karashi rai and holding it, it's because you're walking at a normal pace. In a chanami, if you were running, where by the time once you tore the shirayim, you were so close to the edge of dalad amas that no human being could stop at that speed, or you couldn't stop at that speed, that's like shooting an arrow. Conceptually, it's shooting an arrow. We're not married to the running versus throwing. It's just that normally when you throw it, it's out of your hands. When you're running, it's usually in your hands. So the second teretz of the Gemara, actually, as the Ra'ah points out, fits perfectly with the previous Gemara. In other words, the whole discussion of the previous Gemara is that if it reaches a place where you can no longer be mahadarit, where you can't be mahadarit, so then it's really treated as one action. If it's in a position where you could be mahadir under normal circumstances, let's say there's no damage to the object, right? Matzi lahadure, straight out. Not ayide al-chak, leave that issue aside for the moment. So then, what's the din of matzi lahadure, period? What's the din in the previous Gemara? If you could easily regurgitate the piece that he put in your base habliya, what's the din lagabe kam maybe the rab minay, by the truma? Do you say kam the rab minay? No, why not? Because it's two separate actions. That fits with the second teretz. That's what the Ra'ah suggests. Okay? So it's really machlokas of the two lashonas. And Rashi, by the way, might actually believe that, either like the Ra'ah, or it might be that Rashi thinks that even the second, although I don't know why, the second lashon is also, he doesn't think that this sugya is working with the previous sugya. Tosas, however, it seems, wants to avoid the problem. Yes?
Does the Ra'ah think that the first lashon?
Yes, yes. He says that these two lashonos are mamish. This is Shua was mechavin to this without seeing their awe. That these two lashonos are actually arguing about whether or not to accept the premise of the previous sugya. Absolutely. He says it explicitly. The Tosfos wants to understand Yibai Gachem Va'achil as not rejecting the previous sugya. So Tosfos says the following. Who would like to read for me? Who has not read in a while and has an itch and desire to read? Brick, you want to read, don't you? I knew it. Go ahead. You read last week? Nagar, you read.
Yes, Perk Kundras, Lamata Migimot Lohade Hagbah.
Right, that was Rashi Sheet. And the whole point of Ibai Gachva Achel is that you're not Kona until at least it's in your mouth. But Tosa says, Akashalari.
Akashalari, Dimashai Hagbah, Bedavar Shehu Tofes Biado, Obitiv.
Okay, so let me explain what Tosas means with this. How does Rashi envision that you eat the stuff? Well, go like this. But what do you do? What do you do? What do you do if you eat a peanut? A peanut. How do you eat a peanut?
Is it shelled or... I'm serious.
It's shelled already, yes. How do you eat a peanut? You take in your fingers, put it in your mouth, right? You put it in your fingers, right? You don't go to the peanut and grab the peanut by the edge and hold it like this to do a kinyan hagbah on the peanut, right? Whereas if you kept it below three tefachim, according to Rashi, it wouldn't be hagbah. But if you took that peanut and you grabbed it by the scruff of its neck and you raised it above three tefachim, I am kona you the peanut. No, you take the peanut inside your hand, inside your fingers. So Tosu says that's a kinyan in its own right. That's yado. Yado is not midin hagbah. Hagbah means... Often, when we do Agbah, it's also a kinyan yad. If I pick up the remote like this, okay, maybe, I don't know what the din is if it's sticking out of my hand, but if I take this piece of paper, okay, this is not a kinyan Agbah. This is a kinyan yad. You don't need, doesn't have, even if you normally require three trochim, you have the rabbi, one of you clever guys can be, Mirza Shem, you get married, and who are the, you're engaged, Kasten, you're engaged, right? Anybody else engaged here I'm forgetting about? Oh, Nagar, you're engaged too. Okay, so you'll be a wise guy. And the rabbi tells you he's choshesh v'shitas Rashi, and you make a kinyan. At the chuppah, he's going to tell you, raise it up high. So you'll take that pen, or he gives you a sudar. You'll take the sudar, you'll scrunch it up and say, Rabbi, I don't have to raise it up high. I'll just hold it right here because this is a kinyan yad. And I was taught, my Rebbe taught me, that you can be kohen with a kinyan yad. Okay, there you go. So Tosas, that's what Tosas Kash is. Tosas says that either when you hold it in your hand, even if it's below 3 tefachim, I'm eating my peanuts like this. Right? When you hold it in your hand, you're kohen. Rashi's assertion, which is rejected by most Rishonim, that Hagbar requires 3 tefachim, so even if you accept Rashi's assertion, you're either kohen the food, when you're gachen v'achel, again, Rashi's gachen v'achel is not, you know, like if this is a skewer, you know, sticking your mouth around it. Rashi's gachen v'achel is you bend down, you pick it up, and you put it in your mouth. So Tosfos says you're either kohen b'yado, he says, ma shai Hagbar b'davar shutofes b'yado or b'piv. Forget about the details here. Right? If a woman has a basket, a kalsa, she's got her hat, sitting, her basket hat, upside down, so it can catch something, and he puts the get into her kalsa, even though it's brishus habal, even though she's not doing haba, it's a kin chatzah for her, it's like a yad. So you're kona anyway. So what did Rashi accomplish by making bai bai gochen v'achil? You're still kona before it even gets to the Beis Abliyah. So the truth is, forget Tosas' kasha for Yad, but Tosas' kasha that you're kona b'peh, was that a kasha for Rashi? Not necessarily, because Rashi might, it's not explicit, might be holding like the Ra'al for the first lashon of the Gemara, that Eichanami, you're kona when you put it in your mouth. But since you have to put it in your mouth in order to swallow it, that's part of the action of swallowing. And of course you say, come leave the Rabbi Midei. And the key point in the Gemara is that there's no need to make a kinyan before it gets in your mouth. That's what Ibai Gacham Alcha means, as opposed to Akira, which must happen before there can be a Hanacha. So the whole point is that a yoda would be a question, but piv may not be a kasha against Rashi. But I don't care if you have an explanation for Rashi. Tosas was bothered by it because Tosas is trying to make everything work with the previous sukkah. So that's what Tosas comes along and says. Go ahead. El Nira Liri.
The pocket of Rosho. The E by Gachin Vaato. E Imhu Baroshan
Kana. Rosh Kana, right? You see this? There's a little thing stuck on the edge of this little kana, this little skewer, and I stick my mouth around it, and that's how I eat it. I don't put my mouth around it. What do? I lower my mouth around it until that little piece of meat is conveniently placed. Its first contact is in my Beis Habliyah. And as Tosus will say later, you can have your friend do it too. Open wide, and he'll carefully stick it into your throat. So Tosus says that no, e boy gach vachem hu barosh kana yachal hu. Right. Okay. Right. So even though that's not what he's doing now, and when I eat now, I pick it up and I pick it up and put it in my mouth. So even though right now the hagbah is part of the achila, since I could have done it without the hagbah, Tosa says, I could have stuck it straight into the Beis Abliyah where there was no kinyan that took place before the Beis Abliyah. There is a kinyan. Therefore, any kinyan that I do before the Beis Abliyah is considered separate from the Maisa of achilas chelev, and I am chayev on that kinyan. So whether it was I put it into my mouth and I closed my mouth without even putting it in my throat, I'm chayiv right then, and you don't say come every night. And certainly, if I pick it up and put it in my mouth, I'm chayiv on the hagbah, because you do not need to make a kinyan before it's in the Beis Abliyah. So if you make the kinyan by putting it in the Beis Abliyah, come every rabbi. But if you don't, since iboy, then your kinyan, that's what iboy gachen racho means. Since I could have made the kinyan in the Beis Abliyah, I don't have to make a kinyan before. Therefore, you don't say come every rabbi on a kinyan that takes place prior. Yudi. Yes. In other words, the object is sitting here. And again, you have to add that it's on a kane, because if it's sitting on the desk, it's kind of hard to... You'd have to put your mouth around it, maybe without touching it, and then create suction, you know, straight into the Beis Abliyah. Right? And you guys are talented people. I know some of you, most of you are not teenagers anymore. You're just past the teenage years. But, you know, talented bunch of guys. You could do a lot of things with... right? I'm sure if you go to... frat houses on Halloween weekend, whoever was telling me about that, okay? I'm sure that you could see lots of interesting things that people do with food. Lots of those things. So you'll be creative. I agree, you are correct. You're making a good ha'ara, which is, there's a reason why Rashi may not have wanted to have said what Tosa said, because he bought gachel. Even if you're not picking up yadayim, you are presumably, you know, eating it like a cow or a goat would eat something. Right? So you are, I think that's a good point in terms of the language. But Tosus avoids that. So Tosus says that basically means that you can make a kinyan without even putting it in your mouth. Mikomakom, ho'el v'yochol. And without having it in your mouth before you swallow. Therefore, that's not called hagba or being the past terech achila. That's considered a separate action. The hu hadin, having matze lemeimar,
the efshar
la'achila below hagba, which is exactly the scenario in the previous sugya. So what Tosus is actually doing here, as Zach really pointed out when we first started this sugya, is he's making these two sugyas work together perfectly, even according to the first teretz, as opposed to the ra'ah explicitly, and Rashi probably might agree, at least partially with the ra'ah, who understands that at least the first teretz in the Gemara rejects the assumptions of the previous sugya. The previous sugya assumes that if you put it, that even though it has to go through your mouth to get to your throat, as long, at least, as since you could spit it out once it's in your mouth, the kinyan of being in your mouth is separate from the bliya, separate from the chiyav on the truma in that case, and therefore you don't say kol mei dropping it. Our sugya assume at least that if since you have to put it in your mouth in order to swallow it, efshar la'achila below sima b'peh, and therefore you would say kam le'bidrabarine if you sucked it directly off the desk into your mouth. That's the way the Ra'o would say, and that's the way probably Rashi would say. Okay, it's a very interesting. Okay. The rest of the Tosafim you might have read, but I'm not interested. They're a little tangential to the topic. I mean, some of them have to do with the reading of the Gemara, but nothing that I want to dwell on at great length. I mentioned in passing, let's just read it quickly because it's just fun. It is also very tangential, but it's too hard to pass up. The Gemara spoke about the Shita Ben Azai, and Ben Azai said the Mahalik Omedami, that if I walk from a Rishus HaYachid to a Carmelist to a Rishus HaRabim, or let's take our case, if I pick up this object and I start walking in the Rishus HaYachid, so the line, that's exit to Rishus HaRabim, carrying my glasses, I keep walking, this is my behavior. When was the Akira? Well, Ben Azai says, Akira, Hanacha. Akira, Hanacha. Akira, Hanacha. Oops. Right, there was an Akira and now Hanacha versus a Rabin. So according to Ben Azai, Mahalech Omedami, every step I take on the ground is considered a Hanacha. Every time I pick up my foot, it's considered an Akira. So if that's the case, it's beautiful for our sugya, because even though I did a Hagbah over there, that's not the Hagbah. That Akira is not actually the one I'm chayav on for Shabbos. Why? Because I took three steps in order to get out of the house, and every step after the first Hagbah was a new Akira. So therefore, of course, they're not simultaneous. They're not at all simultaneous. So the question is, though, according to Ben Azai, that's beautiful, but how are you ever chayav for Mavir Dalet Amos for Sarabim? Because if I pick up an object and I put it down, I pick up the object and I put it down, and I move it a million Amos in the Rosh Sarabim on Shabbos on Pater. Because that's called Mavir Pachas Pachas Midalan Amos.
Sorry.
What's that?
Sorry.
So, except for, why does Zorek not work? It does. Why is Zorek not answer the question? Because that is Zorek, that's a separate din. It's not Mavir Dalet Amos Bishus Harabim. Zorek is like a told of Mavir Dalet Amos Bishus
Harabim. That's what I'm going with this, meaning that you don't have things interrupting it.
I know, but Zorek doesn't work.
What do you mean?
Zorek is a tolda of Mavir Dalet Amos Bishus Harabim, but you have to have a Mavir Dalet Amos Bishus Harabim.
What's your job?
Ah, that's what the Rishonim said. It's Yerushalmi, actually. So the top Tosa says, Mahalak Ome Dami and Laman Alpha and Beis. Read it, Nagar.
The Mavir Arba Amos, the highest Bishus Harabim, Tilkata Gimiri La Kedamin on the Hazorek, the La Yafin on Mine.
So Tosus says the first teretz is it's just halach l'moshe misina. Okay, you're right. By Ben Azai's principle, you should be pater. There's halach l'moshe misina that you're chayef and mafir dal anam sepshus harabim. It's only odd in the sense that, well, why don't you learn from that principle, extrapolate that in fact mahalich is lach kol midami. But okay, that's Ben Azai's shita.
So that's Tosus's answer to the question, or he's setting up the question with that statement?
No, that's the answer to the question. The hasam. Go ahead.
Mahalik
Stav. What does that mean? Mahalech mechanus. What is a chanus? A rishus hayachid. It's a store. Leplatya is rishus harabim. Sraya and platya is a rishus harabim. I don't know what the word means, but it's a Greek word. And derech stav, which is probably also a Greek word. A stav is a in between area. It could be like a little porch or something like that, uncovered. So when you go from the Rishus HaRabim to the Rishus HaYochid through a Makom Patur, which is either Midaraisa, might be a Carmelist, but either way, if you do that, so Ben Asai says that you are Patur. Why? Because it's like you stopped there. But why is it that you, why you say Mahalaka Omedami there? Because that actually genuinely is a Makom Patur. But when you're in a place where every where the entire area is fundamentally a makom chiyuv, that you don't say mahalach ka'omei dami. That's how he would distinguish. Oh, yes?
It's just, the idea of Ben Asai, we've added assumptions to our understanding of it. I mean, he says that mahalach ka'omei dami, and you said that we assume that every step is going to be, even when you're walking, every step is going to be a kira hanacha or some from the
right
of that. I think that might be almost like presumptuous of what he really means, but why does it have to mean something so particular that we somehow define your walking as subsequent zakiras and anachas? Also, it could be something, especially since considering the case that he has, is that somehow when you are mahalech, even though you are mahalech, we can still describe of you entering or being present in this makom. And especially in the case that he's talking about when you go from Rishus HaYachid and you end in Rishus HaRabim, but there's a place in between, we assume that you were also there as well. And we don't pretend as if you weren't there. When you're Mahalik, it's as if you were also there, as if you were present there, as if you were Omed there. And having such an understanding, I think, seems to... It's not that we really define that every foot that you take is a Kira or a Nacha.
But the question of Tosas and Lishonim is that exactly that assumption.
I'm aware that that's the assumption. I'm
right.
Arguing against their assumption.
Okay.
You can easily answer all these questions. We just don't have the assumption that Tosos and the Yerushalmi seem to have.
So I think that if you look at all of the sugyos, Ben Asai, what's the last sentence you stated?
Couldn't we say something along...
No, I understood what your suggestion was. My question is, are you proposing that's what the Gemara understood? Because you have to look at all the Ben Asai cases. I think it may not actually...
That the Gemara
I'm not sure if you look at the cases where the Gemara applies it. There may be other cases. I don't remember if it actually will work.
Just from the cases I see in front of me.
This is true.
But.
Well, that in effect is almost Tosus as Teretz.
Could
be Tosus as Teretz.
Not, no, because we saw what Tosus as Teretz is. I'm not saying the same thing as that.
Tosus is saying that you only apply this principle when you are, I would say when you're moving in different places, then you say that you were in the Makom Patur. Whereas when you're in the Rishus HaRabim the entire time...
Really that they're... Meaning that, to say that inherently means we're not saying the same thing. To say that really, that only applies in some scenarios and other scenarios shows that a very specific literal translation of it, which we can only apply to some ideas, and if we're going to take this literal idea, we can't really apply it to all scenarios. We're going to have to say that there's some like... You know,
Sora
from Sinai that we could.
No, but when Tosa says, Mayri, Veloyofinim, the Hassam, Mina, the Hassam, why didn't you learn? And this is my kasha, I said, why didn't you learn from the Lach Shomri Sinai that Ben Asai is wrong? So Tosa says, because that's a case where the entire place is a Makom Chiyuv. But here, you're passing through Makom Patur. What does that mean? It means that in other words, if you don't say Mahalakom Adami, it's like he was never in the Makom Patur. That's really what you were saying. That's why when you go past to another rishus.
I mean, not that we say that every time you take another step is a kira and anacha.
No, but every time you change rishuyos, it's like
exactly.
It's an
agreement. Something that you should establish that.
So that could be Tosus's first explanation. Think about it. Yerushalmi parach leben Asai heichem eshkachas barved dal ramis brishus haram demechayev umeshani bekofetz. Spence, that was your suggestion. He jumps. Okay. I think you could read very much what Tosa says is your suggestion.
You can use his ideas, or it just... I wouldn't have described it as that... in general, he says kamhalach. He says mahalach ko'omitami. However, we're to find a way to see why we don't learn from it. Meaning, right? He says that one is just mesorah misinai. We have that you're going to be chayev for ma'avir.
Right, but the question is, why not say?
And why not learn from ma'avir to the other one? I'm trying to say that they don't contradict. Ma'avir shouldn't contradict the idea of mahalach ko'omitami. They don't contradict. That's what I want to say. This is answering. Of course, they contradict. They can't in any way coalesce. So there must be a reason why we do or don't apply because they do contradict. That's certainly what Tosafos is saying. I want to suggest: isn't there a way to read it that they don't inherently contradict?
Again, my question is: what's the maskan of Tosafos? I understand the Tosafos presents it really as a conflict, but he solves it by limiting Ben Azai and explaining a sort, not really fully explaining.
So he certainly leaves it as a conflict.
But his point is that because you go through a makom patur, that's why Ben Azai says mahalik ka'omei dami. But when you're in the same reshus of chiyuv all the time, then you don't say mahalik ka'omei dami. So why? What's the difference between the two? Just because one's a makom patur? So I thought that it's not the per se it's a makom patur, it's that it's another makom. His reshus ayachet, this is a makom patur, this reshus aram. And to say, if you don't say mahalik ka'omei dami, then basically you never acknowledge that he was even in the Makom Patur in between. Okay. Anyway. Fine. We mentioned, Sam already pointed out, Tosos Dibar Maschal Avazurik assumes, like those we've shown him again, there were three shitos, when you go rare something, whether or not starting to drag something constitutes an Akira. The Rashba and the Ritva, and I think the Rambam also says yes. And they say that the Gemara and Shabbos of Zirza Dekane is simply when you do this, when you rotate this way. In fact, one of them, somebody comments, it might be the Ramban comments, or somebody, even the Ramban doesn't hold that way, that you're also not Kone by Mishicha. If you move the object this way, if you roll it as opposed to dragging it, you're not Kone by Mishicha because you never have an Akira Mimkoma. Not of the entire object at once. And other Rishonim say, the Ramban said Akira only works. Kira only takes place with gray route when you do this. Whoop. When this, you pull it off and it's now in the Rosh Hashanah, you have a Hagbah at the same time. That's how gray route would work. And the Ravid says that whenever you go rare something from one Rosh to the other, by definition, the changing of Rosh constitutes an Akira and Hanacha. Yeah.
Right, you thought that Ramah was or was not the Shatnet
Samyan. I always thought that was.
Picking up and putting it down.
No. In other words, like this. That's how the Rashba and the Ritva read it. I always thought it wasn't dragging it.
Read it like that, and I don't know.
I didn't go back and look at the sugya again. I actually had a different understanding of what was going on there. My recollection is from when I read it, but I didn't go back and deal with that sugya. But anyway,
back into the sugya, it seemed like it was just talking about the 24th Feir Shabbos method.
Of pachas. Okay.
Why would that not constitute Mashiach?
Because the object is never at once removed entirely from its makom. When I'm Moshech this way, as soon as I pull out a drop, every place changes. Here, it remains rooted to its original place, to its place each time I make the motion. Okay, so we're going to stop here. Tomorrow, we're going to finish up the big Tosos, Dibo Mascha Ravashi, and we'll probably, you should read on the next, the Tosas that precedes it, Tosas that follows it, and I hope that we will finish tomorrow, and then Chazara, yeah?
Which also means that you could basically never do the Shiva with the sphere.
So that, I spoke about this question, right? Remember my flat tires?
We mentioned sphere? Okay.
I spoke about that, in other words, unless your circle, I said unless your circle is perfect, so you're always going to have, it's always going to be a rotation, but you're right. What you would have to do to be Kone, in theory, to be Kone the car with Mashiach, is you'd have to turn the brakes on and then drag the car. Yep. Wouldn't be a lot of fun. So tomorrow, I hope we will finish tomorrow, and then we will bin Chazara on Wednesday. Okay. Yeah, you can shut that.